you know, I'm not a trained or professional public speaker, which you'll probably gather between now and the next 40 minutes. You know, doing this kind of stuff, speaking in front of large groups of people, doesn't come naturally to me. So it's no wonder that I'm not nervous. But, you know, thanks for the invite, Ian. Thanks to everybody who does service here. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, May, for a great share. Yeah, thanks to everybody else for being here. You know, it's a, you know, as was said earlier, without you guys, I can't stay clean. You know, that's just a fact. You know, I come to meetings regularly to remind myself why I need to come to meetings. You know, I have a, you know, I have a kind of a selective amnesia, you know, when it comes to drugs and alcohol, and I have a great ability to pick and choose which bits I remember and which bits I forget. Not only am I able to remember which bits I remember and which bits to forget, I can also create this kind of, you know, the bits that aren't real. So it's like a fantasy of what it'd be like when I use drugs. And there's a reason for that. You know, when I first came to NA, I mean, I've got, you know, my story's split into two bits. I first got clean when I was 21 in 1993, and I first went to NA when I was in 92. And I stayed clean for 6 years. And then I relapsed and I used for about 18 months. And then I came back and I sit here today in my 16th year of recovery. And I don't look old enough. Yeah. I take it a round of applauses for how well I look and I'm the 16th year. And you know, the reason that I say that is because the message is that we can stay clean from drugs when we come here. And that's the fundamental thing that I need to do. It's the first thing that I need to do is to stay clean. And the stuff that we do and the stuff that gets spoken about, you know, meetings regularly, sponsorship, step work, all that stuff, I can't do when I'm using. I might think I can, but I can't. And so that's why I keep coming here. You know, I think it's a, you know, I remember when I first came to NA, you know, I guess my story's split into two parts. You know, it's kind of the heroin years and then it's the cocaine years, you know, and that's how you could kind of describe it, really. And, you know, again, just kind of, you know, listening to what May said, I come from kind of a bit of a recovery family. So my dad's like 40-odd years sober. So some of my earliest memories were kind of being at, like, family function type things and stuff. And I didn't like it then, you know what I mean, if I'm honest. So, but I remember, sorry, you know, going back to something that May said, you know, I always felt different as a kid. You know, and I hear it said a lot, and I don't know whether all kids feel different as a kid. I don't know. But I just felt, you know, I just didn't feel comfortable all the time. And I remember the first time, I was kind of thinking a little bit earlier today about stuff as you do when you're about to, you know, embark on something like this in front of people you don't really know that well. And I was thinking back to the first time I consumed any mood-altering chemical, and it was, you know, it was a bottle of cider. You know, and I think I was some older kid boy. I must have been about 9 years old, something like that. And I remember drinking it. I remember, you know, firstly, I have to note that I pinched the money off the mantelpiece. So, and that was kind of a recurring kind of theme as time went on. So I pinched the money, I had a drink, and you know what? I remember being in the park and things just looked a bit different. And I just felt a little bit easier, you know. I just felt like I could kind of breathe a little easier. And, you know, and I went back, and obviously my parents my mum knew I'd been drinking. And she said, "Have you been drinking?" And I said, "No." You know, and that was it, really. That was from the first time. So I stole and then I lied. And, you know, like I said, that was kind of the default setting for the rest of me using. You know, I remember distinctly, you know, getting to 13 and, you know, our things was kind of solvents, you know, and abusing solvents as kids. And I think I just, you know, as soon as I started doing that, you know, it's an interesting thing. You know, I've heard somebody else say that, you know, I just could not wait to get out of my head. You know, I just could not wait. You know, if someone had offered me drugs at 10, 11, 12 years old, you know, I'd have jumped at it. I just could not wait. And the reason that I couldn't wait to get out of my head, I understand today, is because I needed something that was going to take me away from myself. Because even at a young age, you know, I was kind of, I remember just thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking. And, you know, with that, you know, the way I was thinking kind of affected the way that I felt. Do you know what I mean? And I used to kind of, you know, I used to lie there in bed thinking about what I should have said 3 weeks earlier, or what I'd say next time, or, you know, how she's, you know, he's going to get this and they're going to get that. And I think what happened was that the reason I was so desperate to take drugs was because I just needed a bit of a relief from that. And, you know, what I understand today is that there's a condition that I suffer with, yeah, that we call addiction, which is a little bit tricky for me still to get my head around, because, you know, it doesn't really totally explain the condition I suffer from when I'm clean. I understand that in relation to drugs. But there was something that, that when, as soon as I started taking drugs, there was something that meant that I was desperate to start taking drugs. And when I did start taking them, I absolutely loved them, like somebody else said. And I thought I loved them because I just liked getting out of my head. And I did. But the reason I liked getting out of my head was because it was so fucking... I can't swear, can you?
Can.
Oh, nice one. you didn't used to be able to swear, eh? What was that all about?
Exactly.
Censorship.
Those days are gone.
Thanks, Tony.
Swear on.
You know, it was because it was just so loud in there, and I just needed something to turn the volume down a little bit. And, you know, I first went to an NA meeting, and I remember going in there, and like I said, I guess I was a little bit prejudiced because of my experience as a kid and my dad, and I didn't understand why my dad wasn't like everyone else, his dad who went to the pub and came home with, like, you know, Ucky trainers and DVDs and all the rest of it. And my dad was, you know, wasn't doing that stuff, so I wasn't getting any, you know, VHS videos, video nasties or trainers or anything like that. But, my, you know, it just... And so I didn't really take to an A when I first got there. And I remember going to my first meeting, and like I said, you know, I, unlike some people and unlike a lot of my peers, I didn't use addictively straight away. You know, I could take it or leave it a little bit. I mean, I was 16 living in Manchester in 1988, which was the epicenter of acid house. I'm saying that, I'm looking at Tony because I know he thinks very differently. but it was a great time to... He's turned me off. And, you know, it was all that thing of, like, you know, drugs and ease and all that kind of stuff. And I absolutely loved it. You know, and there was a thing back there where, you know, what a lot of me and my mates would do is, you know, there was these kind of drug dealer, gangster type people who'd give us young kids, you know, 50, 100 tablets to go out and sell, and then, you know, you pay for your night, you come home with a few quid, you get by your trainers, and, you know, it was a great life. And I had pals who didn't go on to use in the same way that I did, that they'd start at the beginning of the night, and they'd start giving them all away and losing them, and, you know, they'd get into loads of trouble. Whereas for me, it was a business. I'd do what I needed to do, and then I'd have a good time. And at that point, I came up with this bright idea, because as a consequence of whatever, I'm not going to bore you with my educational kind of history, but I didn't do that well at school. But I was, you know, I was a real underachiever. I could have done a lot better. So I had this bright idea that I was going to go back to college and be a drug dealer. So this was kind of my thing. So I was going to become, you ready? The educated drug dealer, yeah? And what actually happened to me was I became an uneducated drug addict. And I kind of had this notion that, you know, I remember I used to go to people's flats, you know, and they'd, like, you know, everything was all organised. You know, even when I was into heroin, you know, they'd have the syringes, they'd have the BP water, you know, they'd have the swabs, they'd have everything that you needed, and it was all kind of quite, you know, a bit OCD. you know, a little bit kind of like a connoisseur, you know. And I used to think that I'd be, you know, when I was taking drugs, we'd be sat round, you know, discussing the kind of pros and cons of China White or, you know, whatever. And the reality of me, I use it, yeah, is so different to that, you know. I was the guy who would, you know, regularly share needles without giving it a second thought, you know, from places that I was scoring. So I don't know how many people. I was not a connoisseur when it came to taking drugs, you know. And what happened for me was that I crossed a line, I believe. And what happened, you know, I know I'm talking about substances, and I know that we say a lot, you know, it's not about the drugs, it's not about this. But for me, the reason it's important to kind of talk about the substances is because what I'm going to say a little bit later, it'll kind of make sense why I talk about the different substances. Because when I went on my relapse, I was convinced that I was a teenage heroin addict, and that was the problem. And I thought, as long as I don't use needles or heroin, everything's going to be all right. And I'll get to that in a bit, but the reason I'm sat here tonight is because the experiment didn't work that well. It wasn't all right, you know. And so, you know, a lot of the, I'm going to talk a little bit, you know, about, and we talk a lot here about what we do, do you know what I mean? And I think what's really important for me to remember, and the reason that I come here is to remind myself, is what happens when I don't do this? And, you know, just a few little bit of kind of statistical data, you know, like I said, I'm 16 years clean. I've got a 14-year-old son. I've got an 11-year-old daughter. And I've been married 15 years in August. Now, they don't give you those chips for being married for that amount of time. I tell you what, I think both of us deserve one. But, you know, my wife's in recovery. And the reason I'm talking about, you know, what happens when we don't do this, about 2 years ago, my wife's been 16 years clean. And she had two bereavements very close together. And we moved out of town about 10 years ago, so we don't live in London. I work in London, so I'm in and out going to meetings and stuff. But my wife kind of was going to one meeting a week. You know, she had a sponsor. She was just, you know, doing a thing, really. And like I said, she had these two bereavements in very quick succession. And it kind of started this kind of, I don't know what to call it. I wouldn't know what to call it, but basically, she got herself into a really, really seriously, state. And what had happened was that because she just didn't have enough in the bank to cope with what was going on around her. And, you know, it was a really difficult thing for me to kind of see, because, you know, I remember one morning, you know, she said to me, "Mike, I need to go into rehab." And I was like, you know, I was like, you need to go to a meeting. It's what you need to do. And everything that I was saying was kind of batted back. And what I realised was that I was dealing with the disease of addiction, you know. And it was pretty horrific to see. And, you know, I'm glad to say that she managed to kind of turn it around and get to lots of meetings. And she works a really hard programme. But it was quite a kind of wake-up thing for me as well to see that, you know, it was almost worse for her staying clean through that. You know, because it was, you know, it was just so, so painful for her. And, you know, I'm glad to say that, you know, she's kind of sorted that out and she's good. But, you know, just what I also want to talk about is, you know, me relapse, really, you know, because my experience hasn't been of uninterrupted clean time. And I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what happened, really, and what, because I kind of obviously thought about it quite a bit. And, you know, when I got clean, like I said, in 93, I was very fortunate that I went into rehab, and there was a group of kids there that were all intent on staying clean. And you know, I was pretty influential back then. And I think if someone had said to me on one Saturday night, right, we're all going scoring, I'd have probably just gone with them. But I was really fortunate. I was around some guys that when we came out of treatment, there was one meeting a week, and, you know, they got to work setting up meetings, going in jails, you know, setting up, doing helpline stuff. So I was really, really involved, you know. And I got a job. I went back to school. I did a night school. I got into a degree. And part of that thing was to come to London and work for a year. And I moved to London. And as soon as I got here, you know, I, hang on a sec. How long have I got? How long? Oh, okay. I haven't got anywhere near the cold years yet. Anyway, and I came to London, and I remember I used to go to meetings, and it was a bit of a different thing, you know, because it was much bigger, and you could go to meetings, and I just remember thinking, God, all these people here, you know, no one said hello to me, you know, and I, they probably had, but I hadn't said hello to them either, you know, that was the thing, that was the acid test, is that, and what started to happen was that I stopped going to as many meetings, and when I stopped going to meetings, or I wasn't going to as many meetings, and I wasn't doing the service, and I wasn't doing all that stuff, I actually thought I started feeling better. And don't laugh. I started to think, I'm actually feeling, those meetings are doing my head in. Not only are they doing my head in, I'm feeling terrible when I come out of those meetings, and before I go in, I feel great. And I was going to meetings, and I used to go to the, you know, one regularly, and I used to be like, God, not that again, mate. Saying the same thing week in, week out. You know, you just need to get a job, pal. That's what's wrong with you. And what was happening was that I was looking at the differences, and I was distancing myself, and I was actually putting myself in the can drink normally category, you know, and you lot were fucked, you know, and I felt sorry for you. Because I was just a heroin addict, teenage heroin addict, I might add. And now that I'm older and wiser and more money, I think I'll be able to drink okay. Because I never liked drinking. So I should be able to do it. And I remember, and it took about 12 months for me to actually pick up. And what happened was, oh God, I hate telling this story. Because it's pretty, when I say it, it just sounds so bonkers. And I just feel a little bit embarrassed that I actually believe my own bullshit. But, so, I'm going to work, and I remember I started looking on a Thursday and a Friday night. People around me who are kind of my age, getting ready to go out for a drink round the West End on a Friday night. And they'd be talking about it, and they'd be, you know, getting ready to go out. And I started to envy it. Because I never had that. Because I never had any kind of real normal using or drinking. I started to envy it. And then I started to think, why are all these people getting on? Getting better jobs and all this, and I'm not. You know, why is that? And I thought, I know what it is. When they go out on a Friday night and they're all a bit loosened up because they've had a couple of drinks somewhere, in some swanky gaff in hip swinging London, that's where all the business is done. Because I'm not going out on a Friday night, yeah, that's why I'm sat here living my life feeling like I'm getting my pocket picked with no opportunity. Totally lost all perspective and all gratitude. So then I thought, if I was to go out with these people on a Friday night, just if, yeah, I think, and I had a drink with them, manageably, you know, just a couple, loosened myself up, wasn't as prickly, didn't go red when I was talking to him, all that kind of stuff. I reckon I'd get a better job. Wait for it. And if I get a better job, sorry Ian, I know you've heard this, I'm going to attract a good looking woman. Because I've got a better job. And if I attract a good looking woman, I'm going to ask her to marry me. And then when we get married, I'm going to do really well because I'm getting a really, really good job now. And I'm going to buy a house in the country and have a place over west, Knightsbridge Way, little flat in town. And have a quad bike for my son, little pony for my daughter. And that's going to be my life. And I'm going to have a little drinky poos every now and again, like normal people do. And I'm not talking going down the pub like I used to when I was a kid, smashing pubs up and people throwing pint pots around and all that. Not that kind of drinking. Now I'm talking about the connoisseur So I flipped that connoisseur thing into like, you know, a nice piece of cheese with my, with my clarets chilled on a stone floor to optimum room temperature. And that's how I'm going to drink. And I'm going to talk about current affairs and things that, that adults talk about. And I'm going to be set, and my kids are going to be fucking happy, and I'm going to be happy, and it's going to be great. So, you know when they talk about having no mental defence against the first one? Even though I've had 6 years clean, this is what I'm thinking. So when I went out one night, and this girl, who was quite attractive, by the way, said to me, try this. Yeah, it was like some kind of mad cocktail. It had a sparkler in it at one point. And she said, try that. I nearly snatched her hand off. Yeah, and I'd been 6 years clean. And the reason I nearly snatched her hand off was because I'd lost the mental defence against the first one. I'd become powerless again. And I didn't realise it. Now, there's a reason that I'd become powerless. And that is that the disease, the ism, the thing that I felt as a kid had all come back, but I couldn't see it. And what I was seeking for, what I was seeking was a relief from that, and I didn't know it. And that relief I only get by coming, this is the only thing that works for people like me. This is the only thing that has worked for people like me. And if I stop, for me, and if I stop doing this, I will re-enter, I will become ill at ease, dis at ease, and I will become powerless again. So I come here to get empowered against the thing that, when I don't come here, I'm powerless of, which is I can't say no to the first one. And like I say, I grabbed this drink and I drank it, and I had a couple of drinks, and I went home. Now, I came from that kind of rehab thing where, you know, in the rehab they said, you know, if you drink at 3 o'clock, by 6 o'clock, you'll be smoking crack. By 8 o'clock, you'll have a needle in your arm. And by 10 o'clock, you'll be dead. And I had a couple of drinks. I went home. I had the best night's kip I'd had in about 12 months. And I woke up, and I just remember thinking to myself, thank God. There you go, I've proved it. I've proved it. I've just had two drinks. I can't be like an addict. I was just a kind of bit of a crazy teenager that ended up with an heroin habit. And I thought, and what I did was, I was doing some stuff with the convention, you know, doing the merchandise, the t-shirts and stuff. I got my phone out and I was feeling great. I was getting ready to kind of go meet this girl and get this pony and all that kind of gear. And I got my phone out and I typed in the guy's number. I didn't really like that much, if I'm honest. He's not here, I don't think. But he was doing this convention thing. And I rang him up and I said, listen, mate, I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. He said, well, what's the bad news? I said, well, you've got to sort out your own swag, mate. And he went, well, what's the good news? I went, well, I can drink. And then I went through my phone and rang all my pals. Kids had been in treatment with, like, close pals, and went, said the same thing, like, word for word, got some good news and some bad news. And this is a Thursday. On the Friday, I went out on this kind of works. You know, this thing I was talking about, I thought, I'll go out with them from work. I went out with this woman who and I remember, I don't know what had changed. I really don't know what had changed. And I'd never drank alcoholically, to be honest with you. Because of the other substances I took meant you didn't have to. And I remember, as she said, what do you want to drink? And I remember about ordering a pint, yeah. And it was a hot day, I can't remember where we were. And I remember, like, drinking this drink, and I could see this woman through the bottom of the glass, yeah. And I could see the look of kind of, a little bit of kind of shock on her face through the bottom of her glass. And the reason for it was, I just downed a pint, like literally in one go. I just got like that. And that was it then. And I started drinking, and I got so kind of smashed. I've never been as drunk in all my life. You know, I drank, the only way I can compare, only thing I compare it to is that I drank like used to smoke crack, honestly. And this has gone from like 24 hours earlier. I've just, you know, I'm getting a pony and I'm getting all this stuff. And I woke up the next morning and I was still absolutely smashed. And I thought, This is like, it's not even like 48 hours. I thought, I've got to go back to when I was like, I woke up, I could see my life, like a crossroads. And I went back on the Saturday and I got, I picked up a white keyring. And I'd like to say that that's where it ended, and it was a couple of days. But that isn't where it ended. Because what had happened is, I was an everyday user, you know, every single day, every week, waking moment, you know. And that's how I associated being addicted, that because I did it every day. I'd never been a binge user. Anyway, what happened was that, excuse me, I decided that I was going to move back up north and hang out with all my old pals. And because they kind of did things the way that I wanted to do things. And, you know, cutting a long story short, it wasn't long until, you know, like I said, I used to have this thing where, oh, I can take that drug because I don't like it. You know, it's like bonkers, I'm going to take that because I don't like it, so it won't be a problem for me. And I honestly thought, as long as I don't, you know, inject myself or wash it or smoke it, I'm going to be okay. And what happened was that I it wasn't long before I was taking cocaine. And what that did was that, you know, it very quickly took me back to that place where I was just using on my own in the house, on my own, isolated, lonely. And it was even kind of, you know, I used to think my problem was actually being addicted to, you know, physically addicted, and it was almost worse in a lot of ways. And you know, it took me to instant kind of psychosis, and that's what I got from it. And I spent, you know, I spent most of the time creeping around an empty house 4 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, avoiding squeaky floorboards, convinced that I'm under surveillance, you know. There's no girlfriend, there's no wife, no pony, no quad bike, there's none of that. And, you know, when I first came to NA, and, you know, I probably should have said at the beginning that my experience or my story is a collection of stories, and I'm hoping that by telling these stories, the kind of, you know, the principles of the program are coming through. Because when I first went to NA, they said to me, you know, I went out for a coffee with them, and he said to me, I said, what do I do? I was 21 years old, I said, what do I do? They said, well, wake up when you wake up in the morning, just don't pick up. I was like, you fucking mad? Do you know what it's like for me when I wake up in the morning? You know, the only time it was a good idea for me to stop using was when I was out of my mind. And I was always going to stop tomorrow. And what happened was that something changed, because when I woke up in the morning, I didn't need to be junk sick, to be robbing my family and to be doing all that stuff. And I felt immense shame about that, because the compulsion and the obsession for me to get drugs, I had gallons of methadone, I had boxes of Valium, I had all that stuff. But the obsession to use drugs was so, so strong that I did things that when I went into treatment, people spoke about doing when they were junk sick, and I did them when I wasn't. Because I was just totally compelled. And when what I realise now is, when people come to NA, you know, it's, I understand the concept of, you know, just don't pick up the first one. And, you know, if you when you wake up in the morning, just don't pick up. Problem I've got is I can't do that. If I could do that, I wouldn't be coming here and doing this. I'd be doing that. What I need to do is loads of stuff that enables me and empowers me to be able to wake up and not pick up the first one. And you know, at the end of my years, when I was a 21-year-old kid, I used to have this vision, yeah, and it was me getting up in the morning and kind of putting on a suit, yeah, and having a briefcase and having a bit of breakfast with someone and a couple of kids and whatever, and going out to work. And that's all I wanted. Anything about being a kind of educated connoisseur of, you know, drug dealer had just gone totally out the window. I just wanted to be a straight goer. I was sick of it. I was sick of the life. I was sick of the drugs. And I couldn't stop. I could not stop using drugs. Another thing as well, another little caveat I've got to say is, I didn't come here to stop using drugs. So if anyone's wondering whether this works, I did not come here to stop using drugs. I came here to stop using certain drugs. And this is how good it works, because I sit here 16 years, I've not used any drugs. I don't even want it to work. And this vision that I used to have, I just knew was a million miles away from the reality. And, you know, if I talk a little bit about, you know, I found it very, very difficult to get back because I'd lost any respect for meetings and people and recovery. And I kept coming and using again and coming and using again and coming and using again. And I found it really, really difficult to stop because once I pick up, the condition that I suffer with means that I can't say if or when I'm going to stop. And I can't tell you what I'm going to do. And that's a reality. How long have we got left? 5 minutes. And, you know, like I said, I used to have this kind of vision. And you know what? The kind of irony is, when I stopped using last 16 years ago, I did not know that was going to be the last time I was going to use for 16 years. And I'm under no illusion that I could use again. Yeah. And when I came here and I read all that stuff and you read how it works and all that kind of stuff, it was like another language. You know, when they said, you know, don't pick up the first one, you've got to stop using old drugs, I couldn't get my head around that. If they just said to me, you can sniff coke and you can have the odd E and you can kind of go back to when it was fun, I'd have got that. I'd have understood that. But there was one thing that stuck out for me, and that was fake it to make it. And I cottoned onto that. I thought, I can do that, because that's what I've been doing all my life. And I thought, I can do that. And I started, when I came back to NA, I found it very difficult, and something happened where I actually managed to stop for a little bit. And in that time, it was about 12 weeks I managed to stop. I met a girl, and who later went on to become, it is my wife now, who I spoke about a little bit earlier. And, you know, we've got two kids, and, you know, we've got a place out of town, and we've got a place in town. And the madness is that they don't have quad bikes and ponies. I'm not gonna go on that. I could kind of lie and say that it was, and then it's like, wow, and they've got quad bikes and everything. No, but it's not that. But it isn't a million, you know, I couldn't make up how good my life is, yeah. And the great thing about it is my kids have never seen their mum or dad using. And that is very, very, very important to me. And I'll tell you why. Because as a consequence of being 16 years clean, you know, I've built up some material things and I'm financially secure. But the way that I use means that I rip through money like you cannot believe. And it would be a matter of months, if I'm lucky, until I am spending money that my kids need on drugs. It would be a matter of months until I know exactly where my wife's handbag is at any point, at any time in our house. That's the reality, yeah? And that's quite refreshing, because I need to remember that. Because what starts to happen to me is, if I'm not doing this, and as I spoke about earlier when I said about being ill at ease and dis-ease, is that I do start to feel like everyone else is getting on and I'm not. I start to feel like I'm getting my pocket picked. And I start to feel uncomfortable within myself and self-obsessed, and I don't even know it. And then what starts to happen, it kicks in this fantasy. And the fantasy is, I think, right, Mike, this is a great idea. Don't tell anyone about this, but this is a good one. It's a great one. Book yourself a first-class flight to LA. Tell them all it's to do with work. Yeah, draw a load of money out of the bank, yep, and just get on the coke. Yeah. Now, I know I realise I've spoken a lot about substances, yeah, but that's why I'm here. And what I'm going to do is, when I get to West Hollywood, I'm going to hit the parties, and I'll be kind of congering around the pool with girls in bikinis, and it'll be great, and I won't use needles, and I won't wash it. And, you know, I'll be hanging out with the hip kids. And you know what? I'll probably bump into a film director who's going to be kind of bowled over with my charming kind of North Mancunian accent. He's going to say, you know what? Or a casting agent. And they're going to say, you're just the guy we're looking for for this film. This film's going to be epic. You're going to be da 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 da. Yeah? And I know it's embarrassing and it's a laugh, yeah? But seriously, I can go and pick up based on thinking that's the truth. And that's just one element of the fantasy, you know? And the thing is, I don't ever fantasize about, you know, doing step 10 or writing step 4 or doing anything that's actually going to get me out of the problem that I'm in. I don't fantasize about any of that. You know, I don't fantasize, you know, instead of the girls in bikinis and swimming pools, I'm not like doing a big book study or meditating. Never fantasize about any of that stuff, yeah? And the reason for it is that because it's uncomfortable to me. Doing all this stuff's uncomfortable for me. I know some people love it, like talking about themselves for 40 minutes. And, you know, the really important thing is that, you know, like I said, that so-called fantasy, and it isn't a fantasy, it's a nightmare, is what gets me back in the game and gets me around the table. And you know what, I'm gonna say this, I don't want to sound too graphic, but the extent of my psychosis, and this is when I'm using a drug that I don't think is going to cause me any problems, left me covered in my own blood, in my pants, at fucking, I don't know what time, yeah, desperate. Absolutely desperate, thinking to myself, how on earth has this happened again? How can I be in this situation again? And you know what? Even after that, I could not stop. And you know what? That's why this has to come first, because, you know, without this, you know, my kids wouldn't have the dad. You know, I'm the type of addict, am I done told?
Yeah.
That would be locked, would lock himself in the bathroom and take his kids doing what he's doing. That's just the way that I am, and you know. But I'm glad to be here. The reason that I'm here is to remind myself why I come here and I do this, not anyone else. This is much of an exercise for me as it is for anyone else. And you know, if you are new, keep coming back, because genuinely you are the most important person in this meeting if you're new in NA. That's just the reality. But anyway, I'm going to leave it there. I don't want to. He's talking to me, and I don't want to bore you anymore. So thank you.